Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Liveline. Ray Morrissey was on with us yesterday. He was knocked down, hit and run last Saturday morning near Baltinglass, Castledermot. Silver Audi, grey or silver Audi, didn't stop. Gardaí still looking for the silver Audi with a broken passenger mirror and maybe possibly other damage to the front. Photograph of silver Audi up on our Twitter feed at Joe Liveline or at RTE Liveline. Margaret Bourke has contacted us. It's about her sister, Breida. How is Breida today, Margaret, after her ordeal?
Hello, Joe. Thanks for having me on your show.
Okay.
Breida is traumatised and doing the best she can in a tough situation and waiting to hear from the hospital tomorrow as to how she proceeds further.
Okay. It happened last Tuesday evening, last week, yeah.
That's right, Joe. Yes, yes.
And the Vitalik Avenue in Dublin.
5 to 6.
Okay. Fagan's Pub, a landmark pub on the north side of Dublin.
That's right.
Near Crow Park and various other offices near where the old Lemons factory used to be, near the wonderful library there in the park. Botanic, okay, what happened?
Yes, she decided to go for a walk last Tuesday and she stopped there at the busy junction at Fagan's Pub to cross the road.
Okay.
Now, the traffic light there gave her the go-ahead to proceed. So she went about crossing over, and before she knew it, there was a bicycle wheel between her two legs, and she had been knocked to the ground.
Oh, God.
So, Joe, to make a very long story short, Breida was knocked down. She didn't realise at the time how bad her injury was. The cyclist did stop, yes, and she said that her bell wasn't working. Now, Breida, of course, was very angry at the time and traumatised on the ground. Mm-hmm. And a passerby helped her up, a very kind gentleman, and proceeded to see how she was. And they realised that she had a good injury and proceeded to go to the Mater Hospital with her.
And just now, to be clear, Margaret,
yes,
your sister Breida, she was crossing the road at the correct time. She had the right of way.
Yes.
And you're saying
exactly,
the cyclist,
the lights were green.
Okay, so the cyclist who hit her came through red lights.
Apparently, yes. But Breida had it all clear to go.
Okay, well, then they came through red lights.
She was on the ground.
Okay, and she said to Breida, the cyclist said, as Breida lay on the ground, my bell isn't working.
Her bell wasn't working. Well, she
But it's not her bell wasn't working. It's her, it's her eyesight that wasn't working.
To be honest, Joe, that is what my sister said at the time to her, you know, in anger and complete frustration that, you know, it's your eyes that really that you should be able to look at the light. But anyway, I know accidents do happen. The reason why I felt so strong about getting on to you, Joe, is that to make a long story short, Breida has a fractured humerus, and which is a serious injury.
Yeah.
And she's black and blue all over, swollen. She cannot do very much for herself in the last week. She lives alone.
Oh, God.
She has wonderful neighbours and friends and family, of course, that were trying to assist. Her family is living in the country, so and she's in Dublin. And she's waiting to go back to the hospital tomorrow, hoping that the swelling will be gone down enough for them to be able to do more for her. She cannot wash, clean, cook, drive, nothing at the moment because of this. And we feel that there's so much talk at the moment and ads about motorists hitting cyclists.
Yeah, which is awful.
Well,
yeah.
This is the opposite way around of a cyclist, an accident hitting the pedestrian. Is there any, there's no insurance? Is there any comeback for Breida? Like, if this is going to have an impact on her life going forward, I'd say for many months to come.
Yeah.
Where does one go? Now, the gentleman, the kind gentleman that did assist her and take her to the hospital, did stop a Gardaí on their way and told him of the accident. The Gardaí did take note of her name and address and said accidents like this happen all the time. And he said he would contact her back, or she was to contact him the following day. Now, Breida has tried to contact him in the middle of all the trauma, but she found out, I think recently, that he's not on duty until tomorrow.
Okay.
So, like, it's so traumatizing, and it has just highlighted to us all as to how the pedestrian can be affected. And the cyclist, is there rules on the road for cyclists?
And did she give
it, insurance?
Did the cyclist give her name to... Breida or the...
No. We don't know who this lady is. She cycled away into the sunset and...
But she would have been aware. The cyclist would have been aware because your sister was on the ground, you tell me.
Yes.
Yeah. I presume there was a kerfuffle of people trying to help her, including that man.
I'm sure there was, yes.
Who took her to hospital.
And yes, what well, the kind you... gentleman did. Now, I wasn't there, and
Breida
was too traumatised to come on the show today to speak to you, so I really felt I had to speak on her behalf, you know.
And did you get the name of the man who took her to hospital?
He didn't want to give his name, this
gentleman, my God.
You know. He was just a kind gentleman who helped her so much and spoke to the Gardaí, and they have details of that already.
And she had a broken humerus, which is, it's your arm, obviously, and it's extraordinarily debilitating.
Absolutely.
In terms of living on your own, in terms of everything in your life.
In terms of everything. Now, with COVID and everything, you're told to you know, go for a walk, get out there, breathe. You know, she worked in a pub and lost work there a year ago because of COVID.
Oh, God.
And it doesn't look like now, even if things are opening up, what her future holds. Because she's going to have many months of rehabilitation because of this injury. And, you know, it's just that we're lost on it. It's just a highlight to listeners that could have been a mother and a baby in a pram. You know, what I'm trying to say is motorists, you have a comeback with a motorist. You have help, you have assistance there, you have the law. What is out there with regards to cyclists? There is no law. Is there out there? I don't know. Is there any comeback for Breida with compensation to help her in the next few months?
Mm-hmm.
Can anyone out there help or tell us? Or has anybody ever come across, you know, that type of scenario? Like, there's ads on the television about keeping your space and all of that, you know, for motors, and rightly so, I know. But it's just that this is from the other side of the coin, you know.
Is there any, I know Fagan's is closed, and it's a beautiful pub in terms of the flowers and everything outside, that's my memory of it, but is there any CCTV?
Well, now, would the Road Safety Authority be able to tell us that?
Does anyone who works in Fagan's, I know they have outdoor CCTV on that corner.
Well, I'm sure it's a very busy junction, so hopefully there would be.
Would they,
you know,
does the bank have CCTV? There's a bank there, isn't there?
I'm not familiar with the area.
Yeah, but Jim, quite well. Jim Markey clothes shop is there, very well known clothes shop. Has that shop got CCTV?
Yes, and in the event that there was CCTV, what is the story with regards to pedestrian, and how are they covered when they're on the road? Is there any compensation or insurance that will help Breida in the next few months? Because God only knows, after putting up with such a year that it has been.
And how is she in herself with the shock of it?
Traumatised, very upset.
Wow.
And as the days go on, it begins to sink in with you that you cannot wash yourself. You cannot.
I know.
Do your hair. You have to sit in bed instead of lie down. She's black and blue, Joe, from in between her thighs, her arm, her shoulder. She's swollen on the whole way down along to her fingertips. She can't, literally, she was told not to move that particular arm, which they have in a sling for the minute until the swelling goes down. So when you're living on your own, can you visualize that? You know, a lady who loves her style, loves how she looks, loves, you know, to drive, even to go for a little spin now that that you can drive further away than 5 miles. She was so looking forward to that alone. None of that is possible for her. And my kind sister in Carlow will have to bring her down once the hospital appointment is over, okay, to try and care for her while she's recovering.
Yeah, and as you say, she's traumatised, to say the least.
Traumatised. Yes.
Okay, say with us, Margaret. Joe at rte.ie, 51551, my chance is the text number. John.
Yeah, hi, Joe.
What happened to you?
I was just wondering your time with the bike incident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was out on my bike there on Saturday.
Okay.
I was up the back end of the Leicester Lakes.
Okay.
And a car came up behind me, and I could see them coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I moved in slightly on the road, and next minute I just felt a hand off back, vegetable shove, and I was pushed up onto the side of the ditch, and I don't see 60 over the handle.
Yeah, the line is dreadful, unfortunately. You're saying somebody stuck their hand out the open window, a passenger, obviously, I presume, was it?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Leaned out the open window and pushed you to knock you off your bike.
Yeah, that's it, exactly, yeah.
And did they say anything, or...?
No, they didn't even stop. Like, I could sense them coming behind.
Yeah.
And so I moved in a little bit, but then they stayed with me at the same pace. And then next minute, I just felt a hand on me back, up on the grass, and...
Deliberately.
Deliberately, yeah. And like, it is, I was expecting them to call it and be on social media or something. But it is a phenomenon. I see, if you go on YouTube...
It is a phenomenon. Let's see, can we get a better line for you there, John? Yeah. I'll come back to you in a sec. Kira, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened to you? And it was a hit and run.
Yeah, it was just 3 years ago now.
Okay.
So I was on my way to work in to do night duty, and it was dark. It was a winter's night. Mm-hmm. And I noticed on the road that as I got closer to the oncoming car, I realised they were veering onto my side of the road.
Okay.
So all I could think to do in a last-minute panic was I steered my car in towards the ditch, and they basically kept coming and just hit the whole driver's side of my car. So I stopped, obviously. They stopped further behind me, and I could see them stopping, so I reached down to get my phone to ring my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sat back up, they went. They just left.
Gone,
yeah.
And how were you? What were you? Well, the car was obviously very damaged, but how were you?
Well, I was in shock initially, and my shoulder and my arm and that was sore because I was kind of hit to the side more so than to the front.
Mm-hmm.
I just was in shock. I got out and I rang my husband, and he said he'd come and meet me because I wasn't long after leaving my house. So he told me to get off the phone and ring the guards, and I did. And then a man came up behind me, and I actually thought that was who was after hitting me and that they'd come back.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. He was actually a resident in the area. He said he heard the bang from his house.
Okay.
And he came out to see what was going on, so I explained it to him, and he just stayed with me until the guards got there, until my husband got there.
And were you hospitalised, Ciara?
Well, my husband brought me into hospital later that night,
yeah.
So I couldn't go into work, obviously, but I still didn't think anything major of it. Like, I had no major injuries to start with, but I ended up having a lot of trouble as time went on, and I ended up having to leave my profession.
Wow.
Yeah, I was in my profession for 10 years and I had to leave it, which was very hard. And I went through a lot of stress and anxiety, going from being used to working all my life to being out of work.
Mm.
It was very difficult to deal with.
So, Kira, you began a detective hunt, so yourself and your husband.
Yes, my husband's in the motor trade, so he kind of, the person's mirror and bits of their vehicle had come off. They were all over the road.
Okay.
So he was able to get information through contacts he knows, through numbers and that, that will be on parts of the car. And he was able to narrow down. He was able to tell the guards the following morning the type of vehicle we were looking for.
Brilliant.
Even specifically between the years, because as you know, models of cars change every couple of years. So he was even be able to go specific between 4 years.
Okay.
So I put it out on the community alert page, and I couldn't believe all the people that shared it and contacted me, and everyone was so nice. And then after two long, stressful days, we got a call from the Garda station to say these people had suddenly come forward.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
okay, so we now get to a court case, do we?
Well, yeah, they were prosecuted through the guards down the line, and then I took a civil case against them also.
Okay, so what did the prosecution, the criminal case, how did that end up?
Well, look, it's a long story. I don't want to go too much into it, but they got off lightly. They got off a lot lighter than they should have.
Oh, in your view. Now, you took a civil case. Why?
Because when I realised that I was going to be out of work, and I think what annoyed me the most was if they had stopped that night, it probably would have been a totally different scenario.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, initially, I was only worried about the car, the damage to it, and the fact that I couldn't go into work that night. That's all I was initially worried about.
Yeah.
You know? And it was about a week later when myself and my husband discussed it, and I decided to take it further. I didn't think about that straight off, obviously. But it was just, if I think the person had stopped that night and had a bit of decency, I probably wouldn't have gone down that route. But then again, I wasn't to know at that time that I was going to be out of work so long, and I was going to be left with a long-term injury that I had to leave my job over.
Yeah. And what was it like taking the civil case, Ciara? Was that difficult?
Well, it wasn't easy. It went on for about 2.5 years.
Wow.
It's not long. It's not long settled. And like that, again, very stressful, very up and down, you know. These things all take time and everything else. But as I said, just getting back to the point, if people would just stop, like, I personally couldn't imagine hitting anyone on the road and not stop. And I just, you know, and for it to go on for nearly going into 3 days before they came forward.
Yeah.
You know, they knew what they'd done, so.
And were you, I know this word doesn't apply, but were you successful in the civil case?
I was in the end, yeah, I was. But like anything,
it was a nightmare as well, yeah.
When you've gone through 3 years of a lot of stress and anxiety, and now luckily I'm only gone back to work in the last few months, so I only got a new job. But as I said, I loved what I did, and it's something I would have stayed in. But I didn't have that choice. It wasn't sustainable to be in it when I was injured, you know.
And Joe, can I just say that
yes,
this lady, yes, she's wonderful. Yes, it's the long-term implications of something like that happening. And that lady was very brave to proceed and follow it up to the very end. But the stress it has caused her. And I can see that happening with my sister. And like all she has to face in the next few months, trying to sort all of this out. And I feel it's more complicated when it was just a cyclist, because I don't know if there's any laws in Ireland around insurance for cyclists, or is there anywhere she can go? Because it can be a more, let's say, straightforward situation if it's a motorist, you know, car and insurance and all that.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's a bicycle and we don't seem to have anything laid on about that.
But I'm just wondering, is the the Good Samaritan, who helped Breda, he might be a witness as well.
Yes, that is true.
So
it'd
be worthwhile trying to contact him. Okay, back to John, the Sally Gap, and had you any idea what age these galoots were that attacked you?
No, I didn't. I didn't see them at all. I didn't see anything. I just went tumbling over and got a glimpse of a car leaving, that was it.
Yeah. And by the way, if you're up the Sandy Gap, you're a semi-pro cyclist. Were you in the locked into the pedals?
Yeah,
do you follow me?
That's exactly, yes. Yeah, I was locked in. And once the bike started going over, I went with the bike.
You can't jump off. Yeah.
No, and then I did finally release from the bike, and the bike went into the ditch, and then I landed out on the road. Now, two oncoming cars did stop. There was a couple in it. They lived there local, and they were offering to bring me in for a tea and offering me a lift home. I never thought to actually ask them, had they got any damage on their cars.
And is this, John, is this a prank? Is this a well-known so-called prank?
It basically is a prank. It's up on YouTube, and the one on YouTube, some poor fella got pushed, and they're laughing as they're doing it, and they're coming along, and they're planning what they're going to do to get the same speed that he's going, and then they push it, and with such a force they're going, and you're going, you have no choice, but you just go into the ditch.
Oh,
but I was blessed. I handed it on the road, but I could have been in the ditch.
Yeah.
No one didn't know I was up there.
Yeah, I'm going to say that,
Now, there is another huge one. It's an elderly man to be pushed over. Now, I'm 48, and I'm getting there, but I got some fright. I got put over.
And is it... okay. Apparently there are a few of them up on YouTube. It's regarded as a bravado prank. Good God.
Yeah, and
it's extraordinarily dangerous one.
Oh, it is. Isn't it? Teenage kids, and I had them looking out. He appears up on some social media nonsense. It's shocking.
Stay there. David is in Dublin South. David, your point,
hello,
please.
John. Yeah, my point is now, I just do a little preamble, I hope I'm not taking too much of your time up. Sure. But it's quite a common practice, listen to that lady there, of cyclists going through red lights. And I know the cyclists, you know, they suffer quite a lot from cars and so forth. But in a number of cases I've seen, even when the cycle lanes provided, they don't use them. My particular situation is, I was driving my wife into James's Hospital, she's a long-term cancer patient.
Right.
Driving in.
Okay.
And... I'm driving into town. There's a cycle lane on my left. There's a single lane going into town and a single lane coming out of town.
Okay.
There's a cyclist in front of me. He's not using the cycle lane. I'm behind him. There's seven or eight cars behind me. They're going to work or wherever they're going. They can't get by. So I wait till there's nothing coming out of town in the outcoming lane.
Yeah.
I go around by the driver, lower my wife's passenger window and shout at the guy, use the cycle lane.
Okay.
I then come up to a roundabout and I stop. Right. He comes around the back of my car, comes up, bangs on my window, and tells me, using the broad F myself, and then continues straight on, goes through the roundabout. I continue on down, coming to KCR Garage. I'm after stop, there's three or four, red, the lights are red, three or four cars ahead of me. He comes in, down on the cycle lane this stage, comes up with the lights, then looks about a half a second left or right, and goes straight through the red lights and down into town. And that's my experience, the situation. And I say it's probably not unique.
Yes,
I agree. You didn't take any... Okay. Mary Farrell. Mary, good afternoon. Joe at RT.ie. Mary.
Thanks for letting me on.
Okay, fire away.
Now, what I have to say is, Joe, that I've had an experience once, a little gorrier on a bicycle on the footpath hit off my elbow. Now, I wasn't hurt.
Okay.
But I have had I've had experience of people on e-scooters on the footpath.
Yes, there's a new phenomenon, yeah. We're relatively
On two occasions, I've had to take them on.
Okay, tell us how you did that.
Well, they started abusing me, so I gave them the same language back. I won't say on air what I said.
And why did they start abusing you?
Because I took them on, because they weren't supposed to be on the footpath.
And what did you say to them, get off the footpath?
No, I said, I was stronger. My voice was stronger than that. I said, get onto the street, I said. But I wasn't that nice, no. I wasn't that nice.
You sound fine, Mary.
I'm very deliberate. And I've had to take on cyclists on the footpath as well.
Okay,
When the
cyclist gave you the elbow, or hit off your elbow...
Well, he was a young. He lived around the corner from where I was living. So
okay.
I speeded up my walk and I saw where he lived, but I didn't go in. I wouldn't take these people on because they're not the type of people you take on, you know.
Okay. Well, it's okay.
But Joe, can I just say something
Margaret,
as well?
Yes,
that
Margaret.
Because
yes.
of the situation the last year with COVID, and I'm sure there's far more cyclists out there now. And this is what's going to be happening going forward. There's going to be more people out cycling. And that gentleman there mentioned correctly, as Breda has indicated to me, because she's living in Dublin and has observed the whole situation, that bicycle lanes are there as well. And he is right. They're not always used. And going forward, when it's going to be so busy with that, with bicycles now and whatnot, like surely they can stop to think that they have to follow the rules of the road, like motorists and civilians as well.
Okay. And Mary, you've never been afraid when you challenge them, no?
To be honest with you, I just take them on. I'm not afraid of anybody.
Okay. Does that get you into worrying situations or dangerous?
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
You have a strong voice.
Oh, no. What I say is they just go.
Okay. You don't want to give me an example of what you say, no?
Well, I wouldn't like to say on there, and I want to say it's not repeatable.
Okay. Mind yourself out there, Mary. That's Mary Farrell. David, thanks. Margaret Bourke and her other callers. 51551 again. Wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And again, difficult subjects coming up. Eileen, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. And you begin your... My addiction to sweets is ruining my life.
Yes, exactly, Joe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It started when I was about... We had a sweet shop and a grocery shop. And I was very good as a young growing up until about sixth class. But when it came to teenage years then, I began eating the sweets in the shop, all the chocolates and stuff that I really liked. Mm-hmm. But I think it really kicked in when I came to about 18, and there was a slimming club started, and I joined it, and I did lose weight. But what I think it's only in the last 2 years I discovered that it was the weighing scale that has really put me over the edge, if you know what I mean. It was hopping on the weighing scale in the morning, dinner or evening, and as you know, with weight, your weight fluctuates throughout the day.
Yeah.
And when my weight, when I would come off the weighing scale, we'd say at dinner, then I'd see I would be maybe a pound or two. So then I would go back into the shop and I'd start eating more sweets. And I just love sweets. I could tell you all about sweets, the nice sweets and the not so nice sweets. So I'd tried everything. So that's really, and I'd tried all the slimming clubs and they did work. And I would knock them at all. I've done all that down through the years. I'm like, my age now is 66.
Okay.
So here I am at 66, battling with it all the time. I didn't do the throwing up, you know, put my fingers back my throat. I've never done that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I have gone to all the swimming clubs and they have worked. But it's come to the stage where I'm tired of being tired, you know, of dealing with my... With my weight. Do you know what I mean? It's an ongoing battle. I start up in the morning, I'll have sweets in a cup. My husband wouldn't even see them in a cup and I'd be picking at them all day.
Yeah.
Do you know? So, and the point is, when I rang yesterday, I heard the other two girls that were on.
Yeah.
And really, there's help out there, you see, for the Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's help for the gambling. But there's really no help for someone like me because those slimming clubs no longer work for me. Hanging the dress on the wardrobe don't work for me. Putting a nice picture of myself up don't work for me anymore. I have a couple of weddings coming up. We'll say hopefully in my daughter's getting married next year.
Okay.
And nothing is... And I have a whole communion in September. And nothing... is working for me to get motivated to do it because I've been there and done that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, so...
And Aileen, when you say it's ruining your life, and you, as you say, you have a sweet tooth, but how is it ruining your life? Or expand on how it's ruining your life.
Well, to be honest, Joe, it's ruining my life, but it's constantly... in my thoughts. Sweet things are constantly in my thoughts, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I remember saying to friends of mine, going back. I said, maybe if I was hypnotized, maybe I could get to the root cause. But it's only, as I said to you, it really in the last 12 months, 2 years, I discovered it was the weighing scale for me. It was hopping on it and not realizing that really the weighing scale, you should only go on it, we'll say, once a week, maybe with the same clothes, the same time. But I was hopping on it 2 or 3 times in the day. Mm-hmm. And that really triggered all these years of... I have lost weight, Joe. I've lost loads of weight.
Okay.
And the swimming clubs have been very good to me. But I was so desperate, I even went to my doctor and I had an appointment to get the gastric bands put in.
Yeah. What did you do?
No, well, you see, I had to fill up a questionnaire first and put on all the things and then my weight. And he didn't even see me because I wasn't big enough. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't heavy enough to do it, you know. But it's just a battle every day for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, the first week of lockdown, I was eating... This is a funny story, you know. Mm. The first week of lockdown, I was eating a Curly Wurly watching television. Do you know those Curly Wurlies?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. And I was pulling at the Curly Wurly and my front tooth fell out. Wow. And it was within days of the first week of the lockdown. But I was glad I had the masks to cover the teeth. What I'm basically saying is there's really...
I know normally you were saying there are guidelines when you're interviewing people who have anorexia and bulimia.
Mm-hmm.
But in your case, you're saying that you believe your problem is just that you have a sweet tooth and it's primarily for chocolates. Is it for cakes or pastries or...
At the moment, it's... chocolate buttons. It could be. It can vary. We'll say chocolate Polo biscuits. You know, cones, ice creams, tasters. It can be anything. Anything. I'm an expert on a bar of chocolate. My favorite chocolate would be the Cadbury's Dairy Milk bar of chocolate, and they have got so small over the years. 2 squares today is equivalent to 1 square when I was growing up. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
But it is
an Irish chocolate. Irish chocolate made with Irish chocolate crumb from Cork is absolutely gorgeous. It's nicer than any chocolate in the world. But what does your doctor say? Does your doctor regard it as a medical problem, your sweet tooth?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
I mean, I was at the doctor now yesterday and I told him about it. And they're so busy now, Joe, you see, with COVID and everything, that even my own, he just gave me the name of a book to read. But I have done all these things. I've read all these books and it's just not working for me anymore. I just don't know where to turn to, if you know what I mean.
So you're fed up with your... addiction to chocolate.
And as I say, Joe, it's not just chocolate. It can be...
Okay, pastry, sweet things, sweet things.
Yeah, it's just a sweet thing. I mean, at the minute, I know that we're into the season of ice cream cones, and I absolutely love them. At the moment as well, it's the old-fashioned sherbet longo. Do you know the powdered sherbet in the bag?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh, my God, I absolutely love them. So it can be... those things today and it could be another sort of sweet thing tomorrow or next week, you know what I mean? Like, but it's just that, where do I go to? I'm 66 and I'm tired of it. I'm just tired of this eating, you know?
Yeah. You're fed up with it.
Absolutely, no, totally fed up with it because health-wise I'm slowing down. I mean, I got arthritis in both hips and...
Well, 66 is young. But Eileen... If you didn't have chocolate in the house...
Oh, sure. Joe, I'm a woman of extremes. I can be very good. I could go 3 months and not touch a bar of chocolate.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
And I could go 6 months. And yeah. I have done that down through the years. I have done it. And, you know, in these slimming clubs, they will tell you, but you know, you should treat yourself. You're entitled to a sweet thing. But in my case, if I were to have a square of chocolate, that's not good for me because I go into the second square and then
Well, a lot of people say that. You know, I open a packet of biscuits and they say once I have one biscuit, I can't stop. And
Yeah. Would you say the thing is like? Would you say that to an alcoholic? You've done so well now. You could have a glass of whiskey or something. I'm in the same boat. I cannot have that sweet thing. If you know what I mean. But I know I have the willpower. I had the willpower to do it all along. But I'm getting tired of it. I'm just really getting tired of the whole thing, the whole shebang of it, as they call it.
And why? And I know it has worked. Now Keith Barry is brilliant at this. But hypnosis. Why do you think it would work?
Well, that was the last resort. I remember saying to a friend, because I never really knew why I was doing it, and I just thought that people have gone to hypnosis,
give
you up the cigarettes and all that.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just thinking that would it work for me? I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay. Say with us, Eileen.
Okay.
joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Somebody just told us that we've had contact from someone connected with the Gardaí and the video of our caller, David. No, it was Andrew, wasn't it? Andrew, remind me, John. He went by John. That John who was pushed off his bike up on the Sally Gap. The video has gone viral. The guys who were in the car videoed them pushing John as they sped along. One of them almost sitting on the sill of the passenger window reaches over and pushes John into the ditch, and apparently in the video you can see John tumble in the ditch, and he told us the fright he got, two, the injuries he could have got, three, that he could have ended up in the ditch where nobody could see him. It was a very quiet road, and four, that because of he was a seasoned cyclist, there must be a name on them, those shoes you wear which are locked into the pedals, he was wearing them and he was caught on the bike, so to speak. Anyway, we'll do more on that later on, but it's horrific, apparently, the video. But it's John said that's the reason why these couriers were doing it. They were doing it to video it and nearly killed them. And yesterday on the programme, we were contacted by Aoife and Roisin, both of them, as it happened, psychology graduates, they're students at different stages. And both of them spoke about their dysfunctional relationship with food, and it was quite harrowing. Now, Eileen has contacted us from Kerry, and she believes she has a dysfunctional relationship with sweet things, and she's been talking about that since the age 16, 17, 18. And she's now 66, and she said she's absolutely fed up with it and wants to try and knock it on the head, as she has before for 3 or 6 months, which is brilliant. Now we've been contacted by Emer Gilroy. Emer, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. Now, you have a dysfunctional relationship with food. Is that fair to say?
I would say I had a very dysfunctional relationship with food. At the moment, I'm past that.
Okay.
The reason I contacted you was, I think when it comes to an eating disorder, for me, an eating disorder is a distressed or a destructive relationship with food. So that could be overeating or it could be undereating. Usually we think of an eating disorder and either undereating or bulimia, you know, making yourself sick or whatever. And I can understand that there are limited resources in hospitals and, you know, it's a very difficult thing to go through. But just from my own experience, I really think that unless you're willing to kind of look inwards and take a bit of responsibility before making the change. I don't think there's any therapist or counsellor or hospitalisation that is going to be able to fix you, because the only person who really can fix you is yourself. So if you decide enough is enough. Now, that might sound a bit harsh, Joe, but I'm speaking from experience. I had an eating disorder, a very dysfunctional relationship with food for 10 years. I mean, I currently am paying for the sins of the past. I've had my lower left leg amputated, I'm missing a few toes on my right foot, I'm on dialysis, you know. So I am now currently trying to tell people, think to the future, okay? What you're doing at the moment, think 10 years' time or even 4 years' time, and everything that you'll miss out on and all the difficulties that you'll have if you don't just say to yourself, right, look, enough is enough, I want to get over this.
But Eimear, you've lost a limb. Did you see?
I've lost part of a limb, my lower, below the knee of my left leg, yes. I'm diabetic, which is part of the issue because I have an eating disorder related to diabetes. So that has led to some major health issues for me. 10 years ago, my doctor warned me this will happen, and they were right. And I'm currently, as I say, paying for the sins
and
of the
past. And on dialysis. And was there a name on your food dysfunctionality?
Well, there is. It's kind of a made-up name. It's called diabulimia. So I don't want to be giving people ideas now because there's no point giving the information to people and then they go out and do something ridiculous. But you're basically using your diabetes to stay thin. If you have no strict control over your blood sugar levels, your body will react in a manner that is effective if you want to lose weight or if you want to stay thin, but it does irreversible damage to your body. Yeah. That mightn't happen in 10 weeks, it mightn't happen in 10 months, but just, you know, years later, you will pay for it. And I mean, it's the same with all eating disorders. You're starving your body of nourishment. I mean, I had issues with my teeth, my hair was thinning, I had mouth ulcers, cold sores.
Oh, God.
You know, don't feel sorry for me, Joan. It wasn't
I feel
easy
for you.
To get
I feel
over
for
it,
you. You've already told me you've lost a limb, toes on the other foot, the remaining foot. Acute renal failure, which means dialysis.
Yep.
But you're well now in terms of the eating disorder. How did that happen?
I just decided. I knew, like, I was tired. Just like Eileen said there, like, I was tired. I was lying to people. I was constantly trying to hide things, constantly being deceptive. Work wasn't going well.
Yeah.
My body, physically, I was breaking down. And because of my diabetes, I was breaking down to probably quite a large degree. So that's why now I have issues. But I will say this one thing. I made the decision. There was no reason why. Just one day I decided, right, enough is enough. And that was it. And I haven't looked back since.
But as you say, there's no coming back from the lost limb and the dialysis.
No, there isn't, no. But I mean, I take responsibility for these things happening to me. I think it would be very difficult if, for example, I woke up after an accident and I'd lost a leg. Or, you know, something terrible had happened. I could feel sorry for myself if that was the case. But it was of my own doing, really. So I never feel sorry for myself, and I just now try to maintain what I have left and what's working for me.
Okay.
Did you
get help, Eimear?
I did. Went to for different psychiatric help, and I was with counsellors and therapists. My family and friends were wonderful to me, but when through all of that, I didn't want to get better. So I would go for these counselling sessions or whatever, and as soon as I was out the door, that was it done. I'd tell them what they wanted to hear or what I sound, because I can talk the talk if I need to.
And have you any insight in now where you are well, even though there's irreparable damage onto your body, and kidney can be dealt with if you were lucky enough to have a transplant or whatever. But now that you have insight into why you you couldn't stop?
It's an addiction, Joe. I think it's like an addiction. And it's the only addiction I have experience in. But I would imagine much like alcohol or even overeating or drugs or self-harm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something you feel you need. And there's no stopping it. There's no getting past it, no matter who you go to, who you talk to, or what hospital you get sent to. Unless you have decided that you are ready to change. I genuinely, now maybe I'm totally wrong and maybe I'm giving off all sorts of terrible vibes to people, but I just think unless you are willing to decide for yourself, I'm done with this.
Okay. Eileen, do you want to come in on the conversation? You're still there, right?
And yes, I am, Joe. That's exactly what would be my fear. My fear would be that I would get diabetes. And I mean, last year I was at a specialist and I had a blockage in my heart of 30%, and my cholesterol was high, and I'm on blood thinners, and my blood pressure is high, and arthritis in my hips, which thank God hasn't developed really yet. But even all that, and that specialist said to me, "Come back and I'll be calling you in 12 months and try and lose 2 or 3 stone." He said, like that.
Could I just suggest something to you? I think you sound like you're very harsh on yourself. Mm. And I mean, we're all tempted when you want to take on, resolve to do something different. We want, big results quickly. Now, you're talking about, a communion coming up and a wedding or whatever else is coming up. I would say, set realistic goals for yourself. I mean, you're not going to lose, 3 or 4 stone in a short amount of time. You have to, and be kind to yourself. If you're doing well, you lose the weight, bit by bit. But I just think you're very harsh on yourself.
I think so, yeah.
Give yourself credit for at least now you're after ringing Joe and you're after, voicing your feelings.
Maybe I am harsh on myself, and I would be impatient as regards when I would be losing the weight, to try and lose it quickly,
Eileen, you spoke about those long periods where you didn't eat sweets. Have you any idea why you did something happen that you started eating sweets again?
You see, it's either all or nothing with me, Joe. I cannot eat that one square bar of chocolate. I'd have to go all the way. And when I am completely out, and I mean really out, I forget about them. I even down to 21 days, you lose the craving for things, and I do lose the craving for it. But if I just, let it be 3 months, 6 months, I've done it for a year some other time, if just that one bar of chocolate or a slice of cake or something, that would trigger something in my brain I can't control, and then I'm on that roller coaster again.
Okay.
Well, Joe, I'm interrupting you. If I could just say as well to Eileen, you're concerned maybe about developing diabetes at some stage.
Yes.
And I mean, what goes with diabetes, a lot of times people just think, oh, that person can't have sugar.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But it's all the complications that arise from not having good blood sugar control and that come down the line a little bit. And I mean, you're still a young woman, you're only 66, these are things that you could, most likely prevent. But I mean, if you make the decision yourself that you want to change, you will be able to, but it has to be bit by bit, day by day. I mean, I will still say, I have to check myself every so often. Now, I can't afford to lose any more toes, I can't afford to have any more damage done to my body. So that is motivation enough for me.
Yes.
But the addictions like one would never say to somebody with a broken arm, "Ah, come on, cop yourself on. What happened to you and your?"
That's right.
I might, Joe.
How do you manage? You've lost a leg and toes. I know you say.
I have a prosthetic.
Okay, how does that work out?
It's great. Yeah, it gets me around. No bother at all. I have an automatic car, and my uncle adapted my car for me so that even if something does happen to the other leg, I can still drive.
Yeah.
There's ways and means.
Yeah.
And you say, Well, do you want? You have a list here. I don't necessarily. It's up to you whether you want to go through. I can't. You list the things you can't have.
You say
I can't get a mortgage.
Oh yeah, so yeah, to get a mortgage you need to be able to have. No, I haven't actually applied for one. But to get a mortgage you need to be able to get like life insurance. Okay, I am not a safe bet for anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, children wouldn't be an issue for me. One of the main things for me, like in later life, I never actually wanted children. But one of my greatest fears is to be a burden for someone. So I'm in the hospital, in and out of the hospital a lot of the time, and I see people who are much, much older than me, but with similar problems to me.
Yeah.
Now, I'm 35. The people that I might be sitting across from could be, 65 or 75. And, they have family members with them, or they have to have somebody who minds them and looks after them all the time. Like, there's very little independence. That, to me, is just a nightmare. Like, if that's in my future, that's a nightmare for me. So I have to, what I'm left with, I have to maintain.
Okay.
I have to get as healthy as I can,
yeah.
And to, keep on top of things. And that's motivation enough for me to keep on top of things. But it was all through my decision to get better. And that's the point I'm trying to make. I'm veering from it. It really is
okay.
up to the person themselves.
Okay. With help?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm not saying that you can do it on your own.
Yeah.
But if somebody with an eating disorder isn't willing to make that decision...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pointless putting them in hospital. It's pointless sending them to therapists because the switch needs to be changed.
Yeah. Stay with us, Emer and Eileen. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're continuing the conversation on calls being received about eating disorders. Now, Marion is on the line. Marion, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
And you begin... Okay, tell us your story, please.
Okay, I had no notion of ringing except I just heard that lady. Mm-hmm. I think her name was Eileen.
Eileen,
And she said she was 66.
That's
and
right.
She has a very sweet tooth and she's... having trouble. Now, basically, just to make it very short, I'm the same age.
Okay.
I had trouble with my weight all my adult life.
Okay.
I ended up with a serious heart condition, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And about 2.5 years ago, my cardiologist told me I was in a bad way, and I knew it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And he more or less told me I could go at any minute. No, and he said I had to lose the weight. No,
okay.
He didn't say anything I hadn't heard before.
Okay.
I mean, he didn't say anything I didn't know. I had even tried, I had gone to Loughlinstown.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know they have a weight management clinic
there.
I was one of the few people who gained weight while I was there. But essentially what happened was I heard the cardiologist. And there were a couple of things that changed for me. One of them was I had a problem with fluid retention, but that was due to my heart condition. He helped me, get a handle on that. So once I actually got home, that day I decided I can either do this or not.
Okay.
I've been telling myself for 40 years I'll lose weight. I had sometimes lost weight only to gain it again. And I said, I will do it now or stop kidding myself. So what I did was... I had been reading a bit about, now I'm not a scientist, but I'd been reading a bit about the gut microbiome, which there is beginning to be a lot of talk about. And basically the bacteria in your gut determining so much of your physical and mental health, apparently.
Okay.
And I started realizing, I had done, as part of my social work training, I had done a placement in the Rutland Centre a very long time ago, dealing with addiction issues, and of course food can be
great
addictive
place,
as well. And basically, I remember them saying, the man takes a drink and then the drink takes a drink. And it hit me that that's what's happening. That's what was happening with me. I was taking sugar. And then, if this makes any sense, the sugar in me was craving sugar.
Yeah.
The sugar-loving microbes or microorganisms in my gut were craving sugar. That's the only way I could explain it to myself. That there was something in me craving the sugar, I had to stop feeding them.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
Did you have to replace the sugar?
What I did was, first of all, I cut out wheat. I just cut out wheat out of my diet, and that sounds really hard, and it was, but I knew this wasn't going to be easy. I had tried everything else. I now cut out wheat, and that took with it a lot of the sugars and the fats. So no bread, no cakes, no biscuits. Mm. No chocolate at that time. But I could eat, you know, any really good food. I could eat as much as I wanted. And I started replacing my sugar craving, meeting it, if you like, with stuff like dates.
Mm.
I didn't like dates before, but I found dates and sweet potatoes when, you know, they were enough to keep my...
And was
my...
this all under medical supervision, so to speak, Marion? Your cardiologist or whatever?
Well, not exactly, no. I mean, I was still seeing the cardiologist. I saw him kind of 3 weeks after I started this, but then I didn't see him until 6 months later.
Okay.
I also started going to... a physiotherapist, a really good physiotherapist. I'm now still going via Zoom, and I started doing exercise sessions. Now, at the beginning, I could barely walk. Mm-hmm. Right now, I can exercise for an hour. I've lost 8.5 stone. I've kept it off. I lost 8.5 stone over the course of 2 years. And this was, you know, I mean, I had no gastric band. I didn't go to a slimming club. I'm now back eating chocolate, but carefully.
Yeah.
I have, you know, the odd glass of wine. I've just managed to change my eating habits.
Okay, well done. Yeah.
So, you know, with the support of my husband, and it's not just me, another family member moved back at the beginning of October,
yeah,
and has since lost 6 stone, 5.5 stone. So there's something about the way that we have changed, and we're eating really well.
Okay.
But there's something about the way we're doing it that, to my mind, is worth looking at, because it's working for us.
Okay.
And the reason I'm getting on the radio is to say, this has worked for me,
and it can,
I mean,
work.
It might work for somebody else.
Yeah,
and it was as simple as, I said, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do. I cannot eat anything processed.
Okay.
I cannot eat anything with wheat in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm gluten intolerant or whatever, but it was just, this needed to be easy. It needed to be simple.
Okay, so...
So I cut out pasta, I cut out biscuits,
okay,
I cut out cakes. Just gone.
So from what you're saying, it was like you decided, there are certain things in this life that I know I can do, and certain things in this life I know I can't do.
That's it.
And it's almost like saying, I can't play the piano, so I'm not even going to ever try playing the piano, but I'm not going to beat myself up over it. So I can't be eating bread, and I can't be eating wheat-based products or sugar, and just get on with that. That is, life has dealt you that hand.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I had come across a Stoic philosopher. I don't know if you've heard of him, Epictetus.
Mm-hmm.
And Epictetus said, say what it is that you will be, and then do what it is that you must do. And a friend of mine said, that's the same as saying, just flipping do it. And I thought, that's it, just flipping do it. Enough with the messing and telling myself, I'll start next Monday, or I'll do this, or I'll do that. I just made the decision and went with it, and focused on myself and thought, I'm going to do what works for me. Now, I had a lot of support from my husband,
a lot of support from him. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I wasn't going to a dietitian. I know all the stuff, Joe, and people who have had this battle, trust me, they know what they should be doing. It's just to find the help, One lady there, I just heard her while I was on hold, saying about motivating, about a switch. It's finding that switch. And for me, the switch was when I said, take out the wheat. And when I did that, take out the wheat, take out the chocolate. And as I said, I'm back eating chocolate, but in a very, I wouldn't even say controlled way. It's just in a normal way now.
Okay.
Not in a way that I have to sit and eat the whole bar.
Okay.
And I don't know if I'm going on at
no,
that
no,
too
no,
much
I'm
length,
just but... I just check in with Eileen and Emer. But Eileen, does anything there that Marion's saying ring a bell for you? Or
you see, I'm not too sure now, Joe, if I am repeating myself when I said about the doctor sending me off last year, and I just it hasn't clicked with me yet to do it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
There's nothing is. Maybe if I got a heart attack, God forbid, that maybe then I might wake up and realise that I have to do this, you know. But otherwise,
Eileen, given that, as you say, your problem is with chocolate and sweets, like when you see an ad on telly or whatever for chocolate, would that, because some of the ads are incredibly seductive for chocolate, would that spark you?
It would, it could. It definitely would and could. And as I say, if I had a bar of chocolate in the house and I had been off them for, we'll say, 3 months and take that square, I'd finish the bar and I'd actually drive to town and stock up then.
And then at Easter when they were selling, I think, was it 5 Easter eggs for a fiver in Tesco?
I have absolutely no mass on Easter eggs, Joe, because I tell you, the chocolate is so thin in them I nearly have to put the whole lot of it into my mouth to get the satisfaction.
And Emer, did what Marion say? Well, what Marion was saying resonated with a lot of what you were saying.
Very much. What Marion said was that she made a conscious decision that she was going to do this. And this is the point that I'm trying to make in relation to an eating disorder. There is so much... Well, there's not so much, but there is help from outside, your family, your friends, doctors, whatever else. But if you don't actually hear what the doctor says, hear what your family say, hear what you are saying yourself, and if you don't make that decision to make a change, you can't.
Okay. Eileen, stay well. As Marion said, and Emer said as well, you've taken a step today.
Yeah.
Don't be hard on yourself and reach out and... You've done it before.
And start again and do it again.
You will do it again.
Joe, before I go, can I just? I know you don't do requests, but this is just for a woman. Her name is Kathleen Healy. She's in Glebe Lodge in Cass Island, and I just want to wish her well. She loves Daniel O'Donnell, and hopefully, when all this will finish. That it will be over, just to the staff and the residents.
And how do you know Kathleen, Eileen?
Because I worked there.
You're very good. And you're so typical of you. You finish your conversation by thinking of others. So well done. Eileen, you mind yourself. Good person. Emer Gilroy and Marion. Back after this. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. And remember, you can DM us on our Twitter feed at RTE Liveline. We mentioned trauma earlier on after that accident. Patrick Kindler. Patrick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Now, you contact us, one, about trauma and two, about eating disorders. Tell us of this clinic in your home country of Germany.
Yes, I attended this clinic in the early 90s, actually, but not due to an eating disorder, but due to trauma. So
Just before we go on, Patrick, I just want to say I now see the full extent of what you're going to say, which is fine, but I'm just more asking people with young children maybe to deflect them for a few minutes. But please proceed.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
No, you're okay. Now, I just want to say, because what happened to you was horrific.
Well, many horrific things happen to young people and other people. I did phone in because yesterday when you were speaking to that young woman with bulimia and her desperate search for psychological help and psychotherapeutic help. It struck me yet again. I've been living in Ireland since 2000, and ever since I was quite shocked at the level of neglect, almost, of people with psychological issues and problems, and how, especially young people, how little help there is out there. And due to my own experience, which I could just briefly outline, I had a very dysfunctional family, and there was a lot of physical and mental and also some sexual abuse and substance abuse as well, and from my own very traumatized parents as well, who were refugees from the Second World War, from far Central Europe, coming back into Germany, and so they didn't know how to deal with children really, but they had four, well, they had five, one of them died, and so a lot of this trauma that they experienced went down to us, and and I was, you could probably say, feral in a way, so I was out a lot and not being taken care of, so I was groomed by neighbor family and taken into their house and raped at the age of five. And actually, I was groomed by the children, and they took me into their house. And then the eldest son and the father abused me. And and this is, I just thought this was what happened to kids, and I didn't know how to deal with it, so I just went home and tried to forget all of that, and had to go into a hospital then later when I started school to have some surgery that was probably due to the damage that was done physically. And then much later in my 20s, I lived in Hamburg, and I was sharing an apartment with a woman who eventually told me I should probably get some therapy, and I didn't know why she was saying that. And she said I was, apparently I was screaming at night. I wasn't aware of that, but she said it was really disrupting her sleep, and I should get some help.
So you were having night terrors, unbeknownst to yourself.
Yes. I had a lot of memories of, of course, of violence and abuse and all of that. But I just thought this was something that everybody had to deal with. I wasn't really aware of happy families or families that weren't dysfunctional. I just thought this was how families were, and this was what you had to put up with.
Yeah.
So I started. She recommended a therapist or a counselor, and I had some counseling with her for a while. And eventually, I was made aware of a clinic that was specifically helping people with this type of trauma, but also eating disorders.
Okay.
And I applied for this clinic, and the minimum stay there was 3 months. That was for mostly for people with eating disorders and narcissistic personality problems. And then the other group that I was then referred to was a minimum or an obligatory stay of 9 months for a kind of reparenting, I think they called it, when there was so much trauma, they just needed to reprogram the way that you looked at the world and at relationships. But I saw so many young women who hated their bodies, who were just so detached from themselves and eating disorders, drinking, of course, but everyone who came there had to make a contract with the clinic and with themselves, firstly, not to be suicidal, and secondly, a contract laying out what was their problem, what was what were they doing that harmed themselves, and what they thought they needed to do to mend themselves. So this was very much patient-oriented. You had to take responsibility for your own mending, but you had fantastic staff and therapists and counselors that helped you.
Two questions. One, Petra, when you were savagely attacked as a child, as a very young child, by these two men, did your mother or anyone go to the police?
No, no. My mother was. She had also similar trauma from being raped on route to Germany from the Ukraine, from where she was born, and she was only 14. And all the young women were raped then by soldiers. And due to her own trauma, she was unable to really see what had happened. She actually later said, "Well, there was hardly any blood," so she just kept me in bed for a few days, and I was in horrible pain. But it sounds terrible, but it is really from when you look at trauma, people. Are not don't act human when they don't get help with trauma. And my parents never got help because they were just surviving. They were in emergency mode their entire lives, really, and that was part of it. So my mother much later apologized and said she was sorry, and I did reconcile with her. And yeah. So
and then my second question was, the 8 month stay in this clinic, who paid for it? Because this is the question yesterday. Mm-hmm. This was the issue yesterday. Aoife is looking for help. She does want to go into a residential setting, but it will cost her €60,000. Who paid in your case?
Yeah, this was paid by the regular health insurance.
Okay.
In Germany, if you work, you have to be insured.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And you pay. Everybody pays an obligatory 14% or 15% of their income into health insurance. And if you're not working, this is paid by the state. So it was a private clinic, but you could apply, and if you could make your case, the state paid for it, and that's what happened.
And as you say, you've had a lot of counselling since. Are your parents still alive, Petra?
No, they aren't. Okay. No. My mother died 4 years ago.
Okay. Second World War.
She had 5 or 6 really happy years with a type of Alzheimer that just made her smile and beam at everyone. And she was really happy, and we were happy to see that in her last years, because she was supremely unhappy during her life.
Okay, that's Petra. Petra Kindler, thank you so much, Petra, and kind regards.
May I just say one thing?
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I rang was that I felt that in Ireland it is too easily accepted that things can be mended by medication and by surgery, and especially this seems to be the case when it comes to this gender dysphoria. There were so many girls that were probably gender dysphoric in the clinic. I was too. I wasn't really a woman. So this is something that I was really worried about to see that the in Ireland this is being pushed.
And I don't mean to be, I'm way over time, but it's a topic that we will definitely come back to. Thanks indeed, Petra Kindler. By the way, we've now come across a video from a WhatsApp group of John. It is John. He's just watched it and he says, yes, it is me. He didn't know it existed. There's now a video, the Guardian now have it, of John being pushed off his bike last Saturday. More on that tomorrow. Fergus Sweeney produced, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Soul, with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.